Greetings, everyone, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And joining me around the table here on a rainy Thursday lunchtime at League Express HQ, we've got the wonderful Martin Sadler. Matthew Shaw is here.
Good morning.
And Doug Thompson is
here
as well.
Good morning.
So hello everybody and welcome to this week's show, as well as the usual Super League results chatter. We're also going to be joined by Danny Ward shortly to talk about all things London Broncos. But before that, there's only one place we can start, and I'm going to come to you first, Martin, on this one. You've been busy on social media all morning. Wigan, points deduction, points adjustment, discuss.
Well, I think it's the right decision. To have a situation where you've got a salary cap of 1.85 million and a club inadvertently goes over the limit by 14,700, which is 0.08% of the salary cap figure, I'm fine with a club being fined for that. That's the correct punishment. But to deduct points for it seems absolutely, you know, using a sledgehammer to crack a walnut, really. So I don't know why. I mean, you've got to say the only trouble is none of us were there at the original hearing, nor at the hearing at Sports Resolution on Tuesday. So we don't know what evidence was provided. And there may have been things that we're not aware of. But I don't think there could be. And, you know, quite frankly, the original decision just seemed to me to be a decision that was almost gleefully made because it was Wigan and because it was Ian Lenigan's club. And, of course, Ian's not been all that popular with the RFL recently. I know it's an independent tribunal, but nonetheless, Wigan do tend to stir emotions from people. But I think it's the right decision, and I think the league table has got to be better without a points deduction in it.
The problem is, Matthew, you've got a threshold there, you've got a limit. What's the grey area if 0.08% is, well, the grey area is 0.09%?
The problem is, if you look at the history of all salary cap penalties, there haven't always been point deductions. Sometimes there have. Some have been more severe than others. There's no. It's like many things in rugby league. Not a lot of consistency.
There's no coherent logic to it, is there? No. You know, that's the point.
For me, I would make it black and white. And this isn't saying that Wigan should be punished with a points deduction, but if I was in charge, if you break the salary cap, you are deducted points, or you are fired, whatever. Just make it consistent.
Well,
let me
tell you what I would do. I would, and I was debating this with somebody on Twitter early today, as Ben says. If you go over the salary cap by a certain limit, let's say £15,000, I would double that figure and then deduct it from next year's salary cap for that club. So £15,000 you go over, £30,000 next year, that reduces your salary cap spend by that amount. So, you know, the more serious the salary cap breach, the bigger the impact on next year's salary cap. That's the way to do it in my view. Or something like that. You know, that it's a financial misdemeanor, so make it a financial penalty. But also one that impacts upon a club's ability to recruit.
I think the issue, if you did that, though, is that clubs would manipulate the cap so that they could, they'd work around that, because if it was such a nominal fee, £15,000 on a salary cap doesn't.
It's a simple rule, though, isn't it? You've got a barrier. If you go over that barrier, you get a penalty.
That's what happens to you. Yeah. That's what happens. As long as it's set out in black and white, so we don't need all this, you know, business about tribunals and so on and so on. It's a simple rule. Apply it, and let's get on with it. And if it doesn't work well, if people do find ways around it, well, amend it. You know, let's come to that. Let's come to that bridge when we cross it.
I mean, Doug, there's a similar thing in football, actually, where there is still a grey area on fielding ineligible players and that kind of thing. Is it because human error and all that kind of thing, they do create grey areas where it can be debated?
In some areas of football, perhaps, but I think at a professional club like Wigan, for me, it's not a good excuse to say that it's an administrative error, if I can say the word. You know, I think you have to be better than that, really. I think the other confusing thing that a lot of, you know, bystanders would think about this is that one independent panel comes to one conclusion, another independent panel comes to another conclusion. How can they be so different?
Because it's a grey area.
Well, it's not that, a very grey area. Yeah.
Well, it's not that different, is it? It's a suspended sentence, so it's actually suspended. But, you know, the original, for 12 months.
The original panel found that it should be a points deduction. The second one found it didn't. You know,
it's like any court of appeal, isn't it? That, you know, you've got the right to appeal. The court of appeal makes a different decision to the original.
But it's quite a different decision, isn't it? You know, to the original one.
I just think when you're doing something like a salary cap, I know I'm repeating what I said. if you know, if the rules are there and you know exactly what happens if you do something, we don't have this argument.
Do we know what happens though? Do clubs now know what the penalty is?
Well, no, they don't, because it's going to be different every time.
No, it needs, as we've said, we need something in black and white to show what happens.
If you go over the salary cap, you are.
Then
there can be no argument. There can be no argument about this. You don't have,
exactly.
Why that isn't the case now, I have absolutely no idea.
Well, no more points deduction then for Wigan. So,
third from bottom.
Yeah, they're still on.
They go above Leeds.
Yes, good. Right, excellent. So, third from bottom now, Wigan. One thing that is black and white now, and it's something that Martin was calling for a couple of weeks ago, we've got a Great Britain tour.
Amazing.
Of the Southern Hemisphere. And
amazing. They've actually revealed it. I thought they were going to wait till about 2 weeks before the tour began to actually reveal the details, but it's great to see. It's Great Britain, obviously. It's four games, starting against Tonga in Hamilton at the end of October, then two tests against New Zealand in Auckland and Christchurch, and then a final test against Papua New Guinea in Port Moresby. It's a hell of a journey. It's going to be fantastic. The shame of it is that it's come out so late, the confirmation, that I suspect there won't be many Great Britain fans following the tour, which there would have been. If we'd known about this 2 or 3 years ago, I think loads of people would have saved up and booked trips for this tour. But, I mean, I was speaking yesterday to Stephen Ratchford of Warrington, and he was saying, the players are really excited about this. The players are really keen to go. He's actually dead keen to go to Papua New Guinea because he's not played there. And, he's saying he's heard so much about it. But, it's going to be a hell of a trip. The Kiwis are going to want revenge for that series defeat, last year. I think it'll be a very, very compelling test series.
Yeah, I think playing Tonga is going to be fantastic, isn't it? Because of the colour of the fans bring to it. There's a real buzz about South Seas Island rugby in general, really.
Well, not just that, it's a big shot in the arm for International Rugby League in the first place, because that middle test there in Auckland, Tonga are playing Australia the same day. It's just what's needed, I think.
Yeah.
Our way up. Look at that face. Go on then, Matthew.
Did it...
Here come the negatives, I suppose.
No, constructive, please.
Constructive negatives.
Do we really need the Lions back? Let me explain myself. Now, I'm a bit younger than everyone in this room. When I think Lions, I think Rugby Union. That's all I think. I don't really remember GB Lions as Rugby League. Now, GB Lions, there's a lot of players from Wales, Ireland, Scotland. How many from Wales, Ireland, Scotland are going to get in the Great Britain Lions team? Maybe Morgan Knowles, who plays for Wales. He's from Cumbria, so he's English. I just don't see why we...
It's a brand.
Need...
It's a brand thing, this, isn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, a brand that I think is associated to Rugby Union now. I don't see the point of... I don't really see the purpose of bringing it back. Why not just... We could still off the tour as England, couldn't we?
I'll tell you one thing about it. It's a bit of a tangential issue, really, but it's still quite important. It means that players can still commit to Wales Island and can commit to Wales Island and Scotland, knowing that they can play at the highest level for Great Britain. And I think that's quite important, because in the last few years, a lot of players who might otherwise qualify for those three nations have committed themselves to England in the belief that by playing for those other three nations, they wouldn't play at the very highest level internationally.
But if you play for a tier two nation, you can play for a tier one nation. So there's nothing stopping you playing for England if you don't pick for England going and playing for Scotland.
That's another debate.
That is a good point to make. But it is a wide ranging debate about international football. But if we're just talking about the, test series, I think it's great to see New Zealand hosting all these international matches, because they've been crying out for it for ages. So I can take the point that Matthew makes. The Great Britain Rugby League brand needs to be re-established. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's going to do an awful lot of good for the game in New Zealand that we have these games over there. There are going to be... I mean, the game in Auckland is going to be a triple header, isn't it? Because I think it's Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, Australia, and then New Zealand, Great Britain.
And don't get me
That's
wrong.
It's going to be a hell of a day.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we shouldn't go on the tour. I absolutely fully support the tour. I just don't know if it needed to be Great Britain. I think we could have just done England. I think the mistake this sport made but was getting rid of the Lions in the first place.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah, that's absolutely
I think bringing it back, I don't really see what purpose it brings, if I'm honest.
But Matthew, when you said, when you think of Great Britain, you think of rugby union. Mm. When you think of England, don't you think of England football, England rugby union, England everything else?
Great Britain, the Lions is a brand, isn't it? It's a brand where England is a country and it's represented at all levels of the game. You know, I think when I think England, I think the England table tennis team because that's what I watch more than the football team. That's the truth.
And your ambition was to play for them at one time.
Yeah, I didn't want to go on a diet basically, so that never happened. But that, I'm not.
It all goes into this debate about the international calendar and that kind of thing. I mean, last week Jamaica was saying we'd like some games before
Absolutely.
The World Cup,
and they should have some, shouldn't they?
And this is where probably. No disrespect, but the second tier European nations could come in and start playing these teams more often during this autumn break or an autumn period.
I think they probably will. Actually, I don't know what the details are of arrangements that are being made, but I would love to see Jamaica playing Wales, for example, Scotland, Ireland, and so on. And you know, let's give them some games. And who wouldn't want to go on a trip to Jamaica to play a game? If they could host a game, that would be great, wouldn't it?
It really would. Well, a long way from Jamaica is Leeds on a rainy, rainy Friday night in what day were we on last week? Was it March? We were still in March.
It was at that March.
Point. Yeah, rainy day in March.
First of March.
First of March, and just how good, Doug, were Wakefield against Leeds?
Very good. Yeah, very encouraging, and obviously a great hat trick by Tom Johnson, and not just the win, but it was an entertaining win as well. Really, great game to watch if you're a Wakefield supporter. Not so good if you're a Leeds supporter.
I mean, it's interesting Wakefield because they finished fifth last year, finished fifth the year before, so it's no surprise, is it, how well they did on against Leeds?
No, not at all. And but Wakefield are supposed to be a smaller club than Leeds. Leeds are the club with all the resources, the fantastic ground. I mean, the stadium's going to be tremendous when it's finally finished. And Leeds have spent a fortune on it, and they need to have a team that will fill it, don't they? Let's face it. But I Wakefield, you've got to give some credit to the Wakefield club and to Michael Carter, who's now the chief executive. They've managed to put a really competitive squad together without breaking the bank. You know, for some unimaginable reason, Wakefield still managed to declare a small profit at the end of most years, which seems to be beyond most clubs. And yet they're able to put a squad together like the one that beat Leeds last Friday night. You know, Danny Brough playing brilliantly, but the real star of the show was Bill Tupu, who made 270 metres, which is the highest figure this year, or probably any other year, I would think. And, you know, Bill Tupu is such a soft-spoken guy, such a gentle guy, really, but what a player. And, you know, what a brilliant pair of halfbacks in Brough and Jacob Miller to be able to feed him down that left-hand side. And then you've got the guy outside him, Tom Johnston. I mean, that combination of those four players is probably the best in the Super League, I think.
They were having a ball on Friday, weren't they?
No. They were a delight to watch, to be honest. I was at the game, I was commentating on the game, and they really were enjoyable to watch. Fast paced, they had everything. Tupu, he made Callum Watkins, who is one of the best centres in the world, he made him look ordinary.
It made him miss seven tackles.
Yeah. I went as far as saying it's one of the best individual performances I've ever seen. And I stick with that. I've not seen anyone dominate a player as good as Callum Watkins like that.
And that includes table tennis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other than when I
England or otherwise.
Next up for Wakefield will be Hull KR this Sunday. And that leads me on to the match which Callum Walker in League Express described as feisty. Between Castleford and Hull KR. Four players sin-binned in the last 10 minutes. Castleford eventually getting the win. What did you make of that, Doug? Castleford winning ugly, I think we could describe that last 10 minutes. Maybe.
Yeah. But a bit unlike Castleford in a way, really, isn't it? You know, but yeah, crazy finish to a game. Not really great, you know, because it's not a great spectacle, is it, when one team's down to 10? But yeah,
he actually scored a late try though.
Yeah, but yeah. Funnily enough, that sometimes happens, doesn't it? Yeah, you know, strangely, it had to get your head around that, isn't it? But you know, taking that aside, another good win for Castle, doesn't it? And you know, they're going really strongly, and you could say they haven't had the hardest of starts to the season, but you can only play those in front of you, and they've done really well in those games.
And Doug, who's at the top of the Albert Goldthorpe medal? A test for you here. Do you know?
You're going to have to tell me that.
Liam Watts, of course.
Well, we've been talking about Liam Watts.
James Robe is winning the Man of Steel medal at the moment, but Liam Watts is winning.
Yeah, and having a great season, isn't he, Liam Watts, to be fair? Yeah, doing a lot of hard work.
He's outstanding.
Particularly that first carry of the ball, yeah.
He is Cass's key player, purely for the amount of minutes he plays.
Absolutely, and it's really interesting that Castleford have picked up one or two players recently, in the, you know, the last 12 months, you know, who were rejected by other clubs, and Liam Watts is the best example. The latest one for them is Jordan Rankin.
Yeah,
who's playing extremely well. Interesting to see Rankin and Brough, two halfbacks last year from Huddersfield, both playing outstandingly well at their new clubs this year.
Cass are currently top of the league table on points difference. St Helens are the team in second at the moment, still with 100% record. They're pretty good against Salford, in all fairness. I don't think Salford played that bad.
No, I think, look, it wasn't the most entertaining game to watch for the casual fan, but I think you could really admire the way Saints defended. It was a defensive, I won't go as far as saying a defensive masterclass, but it was a lesson in how to defend. They were fantastic. Technically, outstanding. Scrambled when they needed to do. It was just a really professional performance. They, for me, from what I've seen so far, are the team to beat.
They were brilliant and they were great defensively. But the outstanding defensive moment of the night, Jackson Hastings on Tommy Makinson, wasn't it? You know, remarkable player, Jackson Hastings, in my opinion. And you know, I would love to see him go really well this year. I think he must be a strong candidate for all the individual medals, the Man of Steel, the Albert Goldthorpe medal, and so on and so forth. Because what's quite interesting about them, when you vote in the way that we do now in both Man of Steel and Albert Goldthorpe, a really strong player with a relatively weak side can pick up an awful lot of points. So, you know, Jackson Hastings, you would guess, when Salford have a good game, you know, he's likely to be the man in the points. So I think it'll be a strong contender.
Albeit, I think it's doing Salford a bit of a disservice to say it's a weak team.
Well, no, it's not a weak team, but it's obviously, you know, they didn't have the equipment to fight Saints, did they? No.
Lee Mossop is there. Liam Watts. He plays an hour in the front row. If you needed a night for your front rowers to be on the pitch and fit, it was against St Helens.
Exactly.
And he went off after about 12 minutes. So, and then Greg Burke went off as well, another front rower. They had it rough. And I thought they had some rough calls against them as well, Salford, in the first half.
They did.
So I don't think they should be too despondent with that. I still think the concern now is injuries are starting to come at Salford. We've said all along, fully fit, they'll be fine. The injuries are coming. You know, Greg Johnson's out for 6 weeks. He's been out all season, to be fair. Lee Mossop's now out for about 4 weeks. There are others in the background. You just think, this is where the test comes for Salford now, when the numbers drop. Do they have the quality and the quantity to get through these periods where a club like Castleford, who've got loads of injuries, are coming through it unscathed?
Or the good contacts to take players on loan from elsewhere. You know, that's another thing, isn't it?
And the money.
Next up for Salford, they're travelling to Catalan on Saturday. For St Helens, it's London. And just a reminder, we've got Danny Ward coming up shortly to talk about London. Let's talk about Catalans then. I mean, Marcus Rashford in Paris was described as Mr. Iceman. What about Sam Tompkins in Perpignan? I mean, that's a hell of a kick right at the end, 45 metres out, was it?
Absolutely, yeah. You don't get much more dramatic finishes than that, do you? And particularly the way Catalans played the week before against Wakefield, when they were pretty ordinary, to be fair. You know, it was a great way to bounce back. They've got another home game coming up this weekend, so always a big advantage for Catalans, or generally a big advantage. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they go. And without David Mead as well, who's one of their standout players so far.
What about that game this evening as we record this, Warrington against Castleford?
Well, that's going to be a really interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, Castleford, I was assuming last week that this would be between two unbeaten clubs. I thought Warrington would win in Perpignan, but they didn't, as we've said. And you know, I mean, you're going to have Liam Watts leading his, you know, leading the Castleford pack, and you know, coming up against, you know, Warrington pack that will be very, very eager to subdue him, I think, and you know, to put a clamp on some of Castleford's, you know, really enterprising play. It's a really difficult game to predict, you know, but I think I'd have to go with Warrington just with home advantage. But, you know, I could so easily be wrong, and Castleford, you know, if they really get on a roll, they could win this game. But, you know, you would have to say Warrington, you know, very, very slight favourites.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I agree. I think it's probably... I know there were some really tasty games round one, but the way the season's panned out, I go as far as saying this isn't the game of the season so far. You know, the two teams flying out. Warrington lost at Catalans, but they are being tipped to be the team to beat at the start of the year. Castleford have gone really well so far. So for me, it is the biggest game of the season so far. I know that says a lot after four rounds, but I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm with Martin, yeah. I just think Warrington, you'll get a response out of them. Castle without Grant Millington, who's a big player for them.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm just swaying towards Warrington.
Well, that was Catalan Dragons' second win of the season. Also picking up their second win of the season. Back-to-back wins now for Hull. Huddersfield 8, Hull 28. Joe Westerman having his 300th career appearance there with two tries. Worrying times, though, at Huddersfield?
Definitely.
Not because they lost to Hull. I mean,
they just, you know, they never really looked in that game on Sunday. Having made a bit more of a challenge against Warrington without really looking in that game either, and you know, they're really struggling, and the coach looks like he's in that situation where, you know, you just can't see the wood for the trees. You try different things.
Strongish comments this week.
Yeah. Very interesting comments after the game. He was pretty clear about he wasn't happy with the defensive effort, the attitude of some of the players. I mean, let's be fair, they haven't coped very well with the loss of Danny Brough. Matt Frawley's struggled so far to make any kind of impression, really. And tough times. They just don't look capable of really picking things up at the moment, the Giants.
They've signed Akilah Uwati on a 3-year deal and then dropped him. I mean, how good does that look?
Yeah.
What you know, I mean, hopefully Uwati can come back and play as well as we think he probably could be able to do. But it you know, their recruitment and their... you know, approach to letting players go doesn't look to me to be very smart, I'm afraid. And you know, it's very sad because I really like Huddersfield as a club. I've got great admiration for Ken Davey, their owner. But you know, they do continue to make some rather dubious calls on recruitment, as far as I'm concerned. And there is just one thing that is worth saying here, that there is a coach going spare at the moment who's currently on a very, very part-time role with the Scotland Rugby Union. And, you know, if anybody is looking for a coach who might stiffen up their defence and stiffen everything up about the place, then Sean Wayne, you know, would be the man to come on board, I would think.
Hull v Leeds on Friday night. Wigan against Huddersfield on Friday night as well. And that leads me to our guest this week, who's Danny Ward, head coach at the London Broncos. And London do it again against a team with W at the start of their name. So look out, Warrington. London 18, Wigan 16. We'll get your thoughts shortly, chaps, on that one. But on Tuesday, I caught up with London's head coach, Danny Ward, to hear his take on that great win on Sunday.
Fantastic. It was a real team effort. You know, everyone kind of turned up and was on. And one of them days, you know, where they defended pretty well. And, you know, it wasn't the best conditions for a free-flowing game. But yeah, awesome win for the boys and a big confidence boost for them after a tough couple of weeks, I think, yeah.
I mean, it has been a tough couple of weeks, but it was a fantastic start against Wakefield. I mean, how's this season progressing versus your own expectations for how it could have gone?
Yeah, we're really happy with where we're at. You know, we've been disappointed with some of his performances, and certainly at OKR and Salford, but we've had a lot of positives each week, and we've been working hard to fix things up in training as well. But to get two wins at this point, you know, we'd have probably taken that at the start of the year, and lots of areas to improve, and hopefully the boys can just keep getting better.
And it does feel like a great season already for the London Broncos. It was a fantastic season last year. Since you come in, Danny, it's really been exciting times at the club. I mean, what's it like at the moment being the head coach of the London Broncos?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, it feels like the best job in the world at the minute. Obviously, it's ups and downs in sport, isn't it? And it's a roller coaster of emotions each week, and the boys put us through it again at the weekend in that last 10-15 minutes. But it's fantastic, you know, the club's bouncing ever since we got promoted, and certainly over the last few years we've just been progressing nicely, and it's been a good place to work, and we've got a good bunch of lads as well that were a pleasure to work with, and it is a good job at the minute, and I say we've just got to keep riding that and help grow the game down here as well off the back of being back in Super League as well. There's lots to do on and off the field.
I mean, I was going to ask you about that, because obviously you've got experience of playing at Harlequins before the Broncos, and you know, it does feel like the London Broncos are really, really important to the game, and there's lots of cracking stuff going on to develop the sport. I mean, what's your sense on that side of things?
Well, I'm always going to be biased and say how important London is, but I genuinely believe that, you know, I think it's huge for the game to expand, you know. I believe in you know, the traditional clubs as well, the traditionalists as well, but I think, you know, we've got to expand and have a London Broncos team in there is fantastic. To have a team in the capital and make it more of a national game is only going to be good. It gives you a lot more media exposure, I think, and a lot more attention in that sense. But we can't just say, oh, we're great for the game, put us in. We've got to be successful on the field as well, and that's our job to build on what we did last year and keep being not just happy to compete in Super League and happy to be there, but we want to be one of the best sides in Super League. You know, we want to be challenging for honours and things like that, and it's a long-term vision. And, you know, one that we're completely buying into. You know, we've got a good youth structure here. We're developing as all, and there's a lot of juniors playing the game down in London. And, you know, we mix that with quality signings from all the season up north, and we can try and get a strong squad together who can really push on and challenge.
The academy that London Broncos have got has been great for years now, but it's now a case of, because you're in Super League, you can keep hold of those players, and that must be of benefit.
Yeah, well, I mean, it has been tough in the past. Even when we've been in Super League, we've lost academy products, you know, like Lewis McCarthy and Tony Club and Sargent. We always have that battle to keep us top young players, especially when, you know, big clubs come from up north, come calling, which is understandable. We've just got to make sure we can offer them the best environment here for their development and let them decide that they want to play for the London Broncos and want to stop here and want to be successful down here. You know, we've got to be successful on the field to want them to be a part of that. But yeah, we have been producing kids for a long, long time. You know, it goes way beyond since I've been here, and we're really proud of that and proud of the growth of the game down here. So it's something we've just got to keep continuing to do.
And this weekend, St Helens. Looking forward to that one. That's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just awesome, isn't it? You look at the fixture list and it's fantastic. You got Wigan, then Saints, and then we got Leeds a week after. It doesn't get much bigger and better than that. You know, that's the challenge of being in Super League, and it's one we're just loving every minute of. It's going to be, there's tough games every week. That's the thing. It's our grand final time every week for us, and we know that there's no easy games, and that's no disrespect to the Championship. It's just we've gone up a level now. You know, we've gone from being one of the top dogs in the league to being the newcomers, and everyone wants to kind of knock us off, and we've got to stand up and need a full 17 performing each week. And again, it's a great challenge and a great opportunity for the club and the lads involved.
Three defeats in four games for Wigan. Where does Adrian Lamb and Wigan go from here after that?
I'm not awfully sure. I've been disappointed by them from what I've seen. I just expected more. And I thought the backs were really poor against London, really poor. The halves were poor. I feel like I'm a big critic of George Williams, and I don't want to be, because I can see that he's a good player, but I think he's not becoming the player that we all thought he would be become. You know,
don't you think we should though give London some credit?
100 Oh, you look, know, look,
they beat Wigan.
I was asked about Wigan. That's why.
I know. I just took it as a given that London played really well.
Well, it's a funny thing, isn't it, that we've only got to see a side losing a couple of games and they're in crisis in rugby league. The fact is, you know, that London, having won two games now, that's the story, really, isn't it? You know, they've won two home games against Wakefield, and that's been shown to be good form, given Wakefield's subsequent form, and now Wigan, the Super League champions. I mean, what's really quite interesting about all that is there's one definite relegation place at the end of the season. Everybody was assuming it's automatically London Broncos. But now Huddersfield are 4 points behind.
Yeah.
So you know, London are not looking like the sacrificial lambs that perhaps everybody thought they were going to be, and that's really quite important.
It's great for the competition, isn't it? As well, you know, because we don't want somebody adrift at the bottom. Really,
you can just imagine the Huddersfield players getting back in the change rooms, having a shower, looking at the results, and going,
"Blimey!" Oh, no. I mean, Huddersfield don't have to panic just yet, do they?
No.
Talk about Wigan in crisis, but what Huddersfield, because they've been there before, haven't
they?
Well,
look, here's the thing: there are a lot of cases where overseas imports don't come good until the transfer.
That is true, isn't it? You've got to give them some time to settle it.
So, you know, Uwate and Frawley aren't used to the conditions of playing in. They need time. I think you start judging teams probably, for me, after around 14 rounds. Probably around Magic is when I think you can start panicking.
But you don't want to get too far adrift.
No, well,
because
that's the thing.
You know, obviously they're playing catch up already, and that adds to the pressure on a team that's struggling. Isn't always
what
great.
I would like to point out. Look at the London team that played. I think 13 were players that played for them last year. Might have been 12. What does it say for the Championship that London have come in with a similar squad to what they've got and have just beat the defending Super League champions?
We were saying in the first series of the League One show, if you create a bottleneck for promotion, the quality improves.
But it's an interesting point that Matthew makes about overseas players coming here and playing the first season in Super League, because I do think he has an important point that it takes a while for some of them in particular to really settle in. We're seeing that at Leeds, aren't we, as well, you know, with their three main guys. But we're seeing it everywhere. It's interesting. I was just looking at our Albert Goldthorpe table. We publish the top 10 each week in League Express, and there's not a single Australian player who's here for the first time this season who's in that top 10. You know, even somebody like Blake Austin isn't in the top 10 yet. It may well be as time goes on, you know, but there are a couple of Australian players who are there, but players who have been, you know, who are not in their first season. Jackson Hastings and Mitch Garbutt. Mitch Garbutt, incidentally, doing extremely well for Hull KR this year.
Off the top of my head, the best player that's come over from the NRL to Super League this year, in my opinion, has been Kensio. But Kensio's played in Super League before. Mm. He knows what he's signing up for. Mm. If you go through the teams, Blake Austin played really well against Leeds, but has been a little bit quiet so far. Jason Clark hasn't particularly set the world alight either. You can go and look. There's examples at every club. Leeds, you know, Trent Merrin's just not been that player that he should be yet. I was speaking to Michael Carter yesterday, and he was saying Trent Merrin won't be a flop. It's just it's the start of the year. They're getting, they're still adapting. Don't forget they're adapting to life off the field as well. I think you've got to give them time. The problem with Huddersfield is that Frawley is their big player now. He's effectively the replacement for Danny Brough. He's not the player in the position you want to be adapting to life in the country. That's where the concern is at the minute.
Yeah.
Well, one team who you can't describe as not being adaptable to weather conditions, and this takes us to the Championship now, is Toulouse. I mean, I watched the highlights on Bulls TV, and I don't know how commentators do it when it's like that. I don't know how you could tell each team apart. But Toulouse win at Bradford. There was another win for Sheffield. That's played for 1-4 now for Mark Aston's side. The Knights also won in a very tense game against Lee at Boven Crescent. Rochdale are off the mark too. Swinton just miss out again. I'm looking at you, Matthew.
They should have won. They should have won. One Halifax official, who I will not name, said to me after the game, well, that was daylight robbery. And honestly, given my Halifax swear, I still absolutely agree.
And what about Dewsbury against Toronto? Talking about conditions, blimey, that was damp underfoot, let's say.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you look at the Toronto results and everyone's expecting them to scorch away with it. Well, they beat York. They were assured enough, you know, 14-0. It's comfortable enough within a 14-point margin, but they only beat Lee by 6. Only beat Dewsbury by, what was it, 5? They hammered Rochdale, and admittedly they hammered Widnes, but you wonder how much Widnes players knew about what was going on there, don't you, behind the scenes, given the...
Well, a lot of people are saying, you know, Toronto are really a Super League team in disguise, but they actually don't look like one at the moment. They look like a pretty good championship team, but, you know, and they've got a lot of very experienced players who are there doing a job for them. But if they were going to go up into Super League, they'd need to, you know, get some new guys in, I think, to be able to compete at that level.
Well, realistically, with no disrespect whatsoever to Dewsbury, you can't imagine Dewsbury keeping any current Super League team to within 5 points. But that said, I think the talking point from the game, given what's going on with his future and everything, is Ryan Brierley. Because they were out of the game, where they're 17-4 down.
Mm.
They bring Brierley on, he scores one, he sets one up and they win the game. Now you have to wonder, why is he not playing?
There's something about Brierley that, I mean, it must be his defence, mustn't it? That, you know, makes coaches think he's not worth the risk. But, you know, I think he's if we had an American football system whereby you had different attacking teams and defensive teams, he'd be one of the top guys in the competition.
His support plays as good as anyone. Yeah, but it is his defence. And if you ask coaches, they will tell him his defence isn't good enough. So. Mm. Fair enough, but I guess when you're chasing a game, and he's the greatest player to bring on.
But Toronto remain unbeaten. But the main talking point from the Championship has to be the getting on for 6,000 nearly to watch Widnes defeat Featherstone. Firstly, the result was something, and the crowds is something else.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those situations, you know, where obviously, you know, you saw the strength of feeling for the club in the build-up to that game, the way that the public reacted. It's just a shame that it took something like that to generate that kind of response. But, you know, I mean, we all know Widnes is a proper rugby league town, and the fans will come out and watch a successful team. And there's been a lot of disillusionment, not just this year, but going back quite a few years. I can remember talking to Widnes fans at games and just, you know, getting tired of not seeing a good team over the years, which, you know, it's hard for any set of fans, but, you know, it shows the potential there.
But you do wonder, don't you, why it's got to come to that, as you say, to get nearly 6,000 people through the gate, which is probably twice what they would have got, I imagine, if they'd not gone into administration at all. And, you know, there's got to be some lessons learned somewhere for us to just market the game better, to make those people want to come out again. You know, what will the next Widnes crowd be? I mean, I hope it's somewhat similar.
To be fair to them, you know, a lot haven't been going because of the apathy and anger towards the previous board of directors. Yeah, of course, by the time Featherstone had gone.
We see this at most clubs who have a bit of adversity, that the crowd do come out the next...
Keithley is another example, aren't they?
I think Widnes are in a precarious one now. You know, there's talk of them trying to push for the playoffs. I think with the current
minus six, it's not
with the current squad they've got. Could they do it? An outside chance, but are they going to be able to realistically keep that squad together? It's still a big wage bill. I'm not certain.
But given Bradford's fate a few years ago when they got 12 points deducted and then got relegated, I suspect that most Widnes fans and the club itself would be happy just to avoid relegation.
True, albeit I've got to say that Widnes have a significantly stronger squad than Bradford did that year. Mm. But you're right.
They have made some news. I know there's been players leaving, but
they've made loans and stuff. Yeah, Dom's beat McQueen. Look, the thing with Widnes now is, I think there is a bit of a feel-good factor. I think the new board are quite clever, know that it's got to be fans first.
Chris Price has said that, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think if they can do that, and most important of all, win games, the crowds will stay, because ultimately the best way to market your team is by marketing a winning team.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that long ago since, you know, there's a lot of spirit about Widnes, and they were taking real big crowds, for example, to the Magic Weekend in Newcastle and doing all sorts of great things. But that spirit sort of fell away a bit, didn't it? You know, towards the end of the, you know, latter regime that was running the club. And I hope they can recapture it, because when the Widnes fans get really enthusiastic, they really give great support, I think, to their club. And we all want to see that coming back and happening, not just at Widnes, but at every club, in fact, never mind just Widnes.
Just to move on to League One, and Hunslet are now top and are also now in the power rankings league, as Matthew waves. You got it riding dark horses, aren't you?
Just a weekly reminder that I have put Hunslet to be promoted this year.
And they're top with playing less games than most of the other teams as well.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's been a great start for Gary Thornton's side, hasn't it? Doncaster beat Workington, which you could argue was a turn up for the Bucks, but Doncaster v Workington could have gone either way, really. Keighley get off the mark as well with their first win of the season. Newcastle Thunder also got their first win of the season under temporary charge of Tim Rumford. And what a game down in Wrexham. We were talking about Halifax and Swinton's daylight robbery. Oldham got out of jail. They're 14-0 down with 20 minutes to go, and they end up winning three tries in the final 20 minutes. So Oldham, I suppose, showing a bit of durability, I think is the
perseverance. Never say die.
Yes.
Attitude.
that's nearly it for this week's show. But we do have to mention before we go the sad passing of Peter Fox. Me and Matthew are a bit too young, I think.
Doug
is as well, should say.
I wish.
Well, in that case, so am I. But young people like me, fortunately, I do remember Peter very well. I remember tangling with him on one or two occasions, in fact, and it was okay. You could always get into an argument with Peter Fox, but you always just had to accept you were going to lose it because Peter would brook no opposition whatsoever. But he was a fantastic coach, an incredible human being, actually. He had some tremendous achievements to his name as a coach, but I think the greatest one, and the one that I most remember, was in 1978 at Oddsall, when he coached Great Britain to beat the Australians with a Dad's Army team. It was dubbed Dad's Army, in fact. And I remember Ian Wooldridge, very well-known national sports reporter, and those sort of guys used to come to rugby league test matches in those days. And Wooldridge described standing watching the two teams coming down the Oddsall banking, because in those days the dressing rooms were at the top. And he said, the Australians came down looking like finely honed greyhounds. You know, they all looked tremendously athletic. And then the British team came out of the dressing rooms and they looked like a bunch of pub landlords. But when they got onto the pitch, they were absolutely brilliant. And that was, to this day, remains one of the most thrilling games I've ever had the privilege to attend. And I don't know whether people listening to this are as old as I am and remember that game, or perhaps were even there. But it was certainly, a game that lived long in the memory. And, for me, it was Peter's greatest achievement. But I'm speaking as a Great Britain fan. And, if only Peter Fox were around to take Great Britain to New Zealand this year.
He'd be an am.
We talk about publicity, but Peter Fox was his own one-man publicity team. Peter Fox would just make sure that everything he said was noteworthy and got into the media. There was there was absolutely no holding back, no trying to please his audience. He said what he thought. The person who he's most like is Brian Clough, I think. There's a lot of, resonance there, in that sort of way. Cloughy was, would always speak his mind, and so would Foxy. So, he's a great loss to our sport.
A great motivator as well. I think that's always the interesting thing about coaching is some people have just got that, just that way of motivating other men, and he could clearly do that.
Great motivator, but also a great spotter of talent. He could sign players who nobody thought were much good, and before you knew it, they were playing brilliant for him. And the other thing about Foxy, I'll just mention this as well, sorry to be going on quite a long time, but he also had this uncanny knack. When he wanted to get rid of a player who wasn't playing all that well for him, if you knew him, you could see his technique. His technique was to say, so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so is playing brilliantly, he was the man of the match, I don't care what other clubs offer for him, I'm not going to sell him. You know, and before you knew it,
he was on his
before
way.
You knew it, was on his way, a tremendous fee, and the club that bought the player was wondering what the hell they'd done.
Just one final announcement as well, the announcement that Eddie Hemmings is retiring. For this, Matthew.
So. Not surprised. He's worked with Neville for a long time and Neville's leaving. The same game. There is going to be a new producer. The talk is that it's going to be, whoever the producer is, they'll do more than one sport. So it's probably going to go down a different direction. But look, what a commentator he has been. You know, everyone thinks wide to west, but you look back certainly at the stuff around that time and he was fantastic at what he did. Him and Steve was superb. I think probably they should have gone together. I think Eddie's missed Steve-O like Steve-O would miss Eddie. But, look, take nothing away from him. He speaks to anyone. He is the utter professional in the eyes of all the coaches and all the clubs. I've got the minimal experience I've had with him, a really pleasant character, and wish him the best in retirement.
I certainly echo what you're saying about his professionalism. I think when he and Steve-O first appeared on the scene back in about 1990, they actually brought a complete breath of fresh air to rugby league. They made rugby league look glamorous. The way they presented it, it was not deadly serious. It wasn't just for anoraks, it was for everybody. They were able to, you know, point out some of the, you know, incredible skills of the game while also being able to focus on some of the amusing things that happened in rugby league as well. They had a great relationship, and if you've ever read their book, they produced a book about 3 or 4 years ago, a jointly written book, and it's a really interesting one because it gives, you know, both of their perspectives on certain incidents, and it's quite comical because they were such different characters. You know, Eddie's the sort of well-dressed, absolutely superbly tailored, with his hair looking absolutely $1 million and so on. Steve-O was the, you know, the scruff, let's say. You know, the guy who could doss down in the middle of the outback somewhere, you know, with God knows what crawling all over him. But, you know, Steve-O, Eddie, that just wasn't for him. It was just it's a very good book and one I'd recommend to anybody to read.
And for those budding commentators out there, the Wide to West try, I think, demonstrates that you don't have to necessarily commentate on what's going on. Just a series of noises does the job as well.
Hey, there's an art to commentary. Certainly on TV, it's different to radio. And I think any budding journalist, being one myself, could learn a lot off him.
And speaking of which, we'll come to you for this bit as well. Before the end, Bat Chat is back.
Yes,
tonight.
Tonight,
Thursdays, 5 o'clock on Free Sports.
Correct.
Channel 64 on Freeview.
Correct. You're well drilled.
I think it's nice you've let the cameras into your bedroom. I think that's really nice. It's a joke off Twitter. It's not my joke. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, really, just really glad it's back. We've got a lot to get through over the next however long. I think it's 30 episodes we've got, isn't it?
Well, you've got. I won't be on every one of them. But I am on this week, though. So if people are sick to death of hearing my voice, then, you know, switch off. But there's also Maurice Lindsay, of course, in tonight's show. And Phil Kaplan, you know, who also is... You know, he's a great thinker about the game. So I think it's going to be an interesting show.
And lastly, Challenge Cup third round this weekend. I've highlighted four ties where upsets are possible. Oldham against Haydock, Workington against Siddle, Whitehaven against Wigan St. Pat's, and Keighley against Distington, the Cumberland champions.
What was the last one?
Keighley against Distington.
Good Cumbrian presence in there.
Yeah, you think that's going to be a shocking one of those four?
Well, Haydock. Well, Haydock got to the fourth round a couple of years ago, didn't
he? Yeah.
Siddle?
Yeah.
At Workington.
Maybe not.
Look what happened.
That's what the cup's
all
about.
I'm happy to be proven wrong.
No, you're not. You never like being proven wrong.
you're going about Hunslet. If one of them come off next week, I'm telling you, Matthew, we're going to have a party.
You should know from Hunslet. And may I point out, who was maybe the only person in the hall of the media saying that Sheffield Eagles would be up there this season? Me.
Well, on that note,
you're welcome.
TotalRL.com for all the latest breaking news from the sport of rugby league. Any parish notices before we go? I think we've covered everything, haven't we? League Express out on Monday.
Well, don't forget to look at TotalRL.com to see all the stats previewing all this weekend's matches, because we're doing that every week, and it's a great piece of work by Danny Spencer. And also, I think Backchat will probably be on TotalRL.com as well on Saturday morning. So, you know, watch out for that too.
The stats balloons are ace. There are just so many facts and figures. It's like a geek's dream, a geek's paradise.
Well, fill your boots, dear listener. TotalRL.com, the place to go for that. Well, that's it for this week's Total Rugby League Show. A big thank you to Doug Thompson for joining us. Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure. And Martin Sadler. I've got to say always a pleasure again, because it's rude to not say that. So always a pleasure. Thank you. And wherever you're going this weekend to join your rugby league side, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.